Hi, everybody. Wynn Claybaugh here, and welcome to another wonderful issue of Masters. And as I approach 20 years in doing these, I get more and more grateful for the, first of all, the generosity of the people in the beauty industry and even outside the beauty industry. But today we're in the beauty industry with this incredible man that I get to interview. But I'm just so grateful for the generosity of people who come forward and are willing to share their stories and share their ideas. I have friends in other industries who tell me that the further up they go in their industry, the more disillusioned they are, the more disappointed they are by what they find at the top. And I think in the beauty industry, it's the exact opposite. I think the further up you go and you meet the people who are heading up organizations, who are running major companies, who have the celebrity and the stardom and the money, and you find that they're the most loving, generous people who absolutely want to see other people succeed. And I think that today is going to be a great representation of that. I'm sitting here with Frank Gambusa. So, Frank, welcome to Masters.
Well, Wynn, it's certainly a pleasure to be here. And as you say, it's 20 years doing it. I could think back to having little cassette decks and listening to some of this stuff and never imagining, you know, two decades later we'd be sitting here doing this together. So I'm very humbled and appreciative to be here tonight.
Well, I'm humbled and grateful as well. You deserve to be here, and our audience absolutely deserves to listen to your message. You are the brand new president of Intercofure, so congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. It's that's also an exciting endeavor as well. And again, I this is my 42nd year in the hair business, and when I look back of all the mentors I had and some of the paths that I've taken, it's people just holding your hand along the way and showing you the way. And you know, if you just stay disciplined and do the right thing, that maybe someday it's your turn. And it seems to be that it's my season right now. And I just look to maybe not disappoint any of my friends and mentors as we go along for the ride, you know?
I think that's kind of what I meant in the beginning, that you look to those mentors and have you ever really been disappointed? You know, when you look to your heroes and said, hey, I need your help, give me a helping hand, were you ever really disappointed?
No. If anything, you know, I think what happens is, before you even realize you need their help, their wisdom kicks in and kind of offers it before you. You know, they kind of know before you do. And when I look back and, you know, some of it seems so surreal. Mm. And I just think it's my job now to make sure that my eyes are wide open and my ears are wide open and look for the youth of the beauty industry and make sure that, you know, this industry continues to move forward and become the profession it was intended to be instead of the trade that it used to be. Years ago, I remember my mom and dad came to the Waldorf Astoria to an event that my wife and I were speaking at. And afterwards, everybody's hugging you and kissing you. You know how the beauty business is. It's family.
Right.
You know, whether you just met him or whether you know him 20 years, there's no barriers. There's no walls. And my father said, man, what is it with you guys? Always hugging and kissing each other. It seems like you're from all over the country. How do you know all these people? I said, well, if you're in the beauty business, you just got to be introduced once and you know them. And, you know, obviously, we speak in a lot of hotels and conventions throughout the country, and you always know when it's accountants or bankers, it's always stale and boring, and all of a sudden, hairdressers roll in, and it's like, move over, because, you know, family's here.
Yeah, well, I heard it once said that hairdressers go to work every single day with the intention of having fun, so that's what we're going to do tonight.
Yep.
We're here in West Hollywood. You, I'm sure you had a very full day of speaking and mentoring and sharing, and so I'm grateful to you that you're taking the time tonight to sit down with me and do this interview. So thank you so much, Frank. So I'm going to read from the research that I've researched on who you are.
Uh-oh.
First of all, how many brands do you have? I mean, I get it that people need like five jobs in the beauty industry or that they want five jobs, but let's see. So the back of your business card has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 logos here.
It's kind of like the octopus of the Visage Group. You know, Wynn, it's interesting because when I look back to 1971, I started off in a barbershop shining shoes and, you know, you just eventually, once you took on the hair portion of it, you just were hoping to get two sides of a haircut even was your biggest challenge. And here we're talking about 8 brands. But, you know, I'm not sure how intentional it all was as much as situations presented themselves. And when you keep your finger on the pulse of not only where things are at, but where things are going, the industry has dramatically changed, and the velocity of change now is at an all-time high. And if we're going to continue to be market leader and stay ahead of the curve, we got to look at what's next. And right now, the fragmentation of beauty is really the topic on the table, and things are changing and things are becoming somewhat different. And because of the fragmentation is why the brands are what they are today. So, you know, we're looking to stay diversified. It's, you know, it's instead of putting all eggs in one basket, we want to make sure we move forward.
Well, I'm going to ask you a lot of more questions about that topic and about the eight brands that are on the back of your business card, but I want to give our audience a little bit more information on who you are. So your career spans more than 30 years. And
That must be old data. It's 42 now.
Well, hey, your people sent this to me, so don't hold this against me. 42 years.
They're busy. They can't update that stuff.
Okay. Heads will roll. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. So 42 years in the industry. Did you really start off as a shoeshine boy at a barbershop?
That's how. Well, I started off as a shoeshine boy in the streets.
Okay.
And I grew up in a town called West New York, New Jersey.
Okay.
And West New York and a town next to it, it's called Guttenberg, was known actually for the most taverns per square mile in anywhere in the country. And there was one on every corner, literally. And we used to go from bar to bar and shine shoes. That's kind of the way you made money. And at one time, I was my early entrepreneurial years where I was selling ham raffles for the local Catholic church. As I go into shine shoes, I would sell ham raffles. And I sold the most ham raffles, that the whole, you know, number one sales guy for the church. And we raised a lot of money. And then I got to thinking, I was like, well, seems like I could make more money selling ham raffles than I could shining shoes. So I'd wait for the guys to get a little bit toasted, and I'd go in and sell ham raffles. And the only mistake I made is that nobody ever really won the ham raffle. You know, I was undercutting the shoe shine price, selling ham raffle tickets, and my dad found out.
Uh-huh.
Man, I old school guy. I took a little whipping for it. And he said, I'm not so much mad at you for selling the ham raffles. I'm mad at you for being stupid enough not to buy a $7 ham and let somebody win.
Right.
He said you were just hustling, you know. So,
So there was no prize?
After the church one. The first one was legit. After that, I got a little creative. But what happened is when that happened, my father said no more. Mm. So he found me a barbershop, Joe Vito Lupo. It's called J. Vito's Continental Barbershop. Put me inside the barbershop, and I was charging $35 for a shine, $65 for boots. Joe Lupo bought the polish, and I got the shine, and whatever tips I made were mine.
How old were you?
I was 13 at the time. I started at 12 with shining, but I was 13 years old at the barbershop.
Wow.
And it was I love the atmosphere. I mean, it was a bunch of guys at the time. They dress up. They come in with hats and shoes on and kind of old school guys. And, you know, I was the shoeshine guy, and I'd hear all these stories from the older guys in the neighborhood who were getting haircuts and shaves, and just fell in love with the business.
Wow. Well, you know, again, looking at your resume and your bio, there's just a ton of professional honors and awards from, you know, best hairstylist, best salon, all kinds of different acknowledgments here, and not just for one brand, but for multiple brands that are under your company. And then the exciting part for you recently is president of Intercoiffure. So I know what Intercoiffure is, and I have a feeling that a lot of our audience knows what Intercoiffure is, but why don't you tell us, what is Intercoiffure?
Intercoiffure is an international hair organization for owners, and you have to be a licensed hairdresser, first of all, whether you're an owner or not at all. You have to be a licensed hairdresser, and it started off in Paris back in the early 30s, and it was Intercoiffure Mondial, which was for the best hairdressers in the world. Period, a place where they can gather and share best practices. And it was a very astute organization of businessmen, artists, as well as the whole fashion industry. And we've had a phenomenal section here in America, which is one of the top three in the world, along with Japan and Germany. And it allows us to meet twice a year with guys like you and phenomenal leaders in the industry to just kind of have this kind of conversation where, you know, share best practices, and we've been to weddings, we've been to christenings, and you wind up having real, real people you can count on to where if things are down or if you're just wanting to start something new, you got a comrade that you can call and be in the trenches with you.
You know, I've always said and thought that I would rather have 10 good salons as my competitors than 10 bad salons. You know, 10 good schools as my competitors than 10 bad schools, because the bad salons and the bad schools just kind of bring down the quality and reputation of the entire industry. But you know, if we're going to compete with each other, that doesn't mean that we're enemies, but that we're comrades. And so to have an organization like that, you said it was best practices. And it truly is the elite, the best of the best, that are members of Intercofure.
Yeah, it is. And, it's first of all, it's by invitation only. So, somebody's not going to just say, hey, I'll write a check and sign up. I mean, there's extensive requirements, and obviously professionalism is at the top. And, you got to be doing the right things for the right reasons, and mm-hmm. you got to be given to your community as well as taken from it. You got to be given to your fellow human beings. And we talked about raising the young before. I've had so much help from these Intercofure salon owners through the years that, from John Jay, who was the president at one time, taught me how to read leases, get a lease made to where you can actually make money. We've had the Gene Juarez's and the Mario Chicosis talk about training programs and, talk about leading teams actually in a way that makes people want to follow without intimidation. And you just have all these icons that are saying, hey, just fly into my town and we'll take it from there. And my wife and I have traveled around the United States, and now obviously we're going around the world with Intercofure. And it just continues to blow my mind that people just open their books and, they show you the financials and just what it takes for us to be able to continue to get better on a daily basis.
Have you been invited to the golf tournaments then?
Which ones?
I was never invited to those.
Well,
it was Gene Juarez. I never got invited to those.
They're dangerous guys to hang out with. Yeah. I can remember the first time I went out with those big dogs. I'm this young kid just salivating hanging out with them. And we'll go to dinner one night, and my guess would be what that dinner cost that night was probably more than I made behind a chair back in the day. And they had this practice where they called it American Express Roulette. So 10 guys, 15 guys with their wives would be at a table drinking the best wines and eating the best food. And then when the bill came, everybody threw in their American Express card, and then the waiter would get them in a lump sum and pull them out one by one and read the person's name, and whoever name it was got to get their card back, and whoever was the last card standing paid the whole tab.
That's funny.
And you talk about somebody praying that their card wasn't, I'm not even sure it was legitimate, where it would have, it couldn't have cleared, I'll tell you that.
Well, I have a feeling that most of the cars that were in that pile had no problem taking on the bill. So.
They didn't, but I was right in it. It was the big problem.
Because, again, these were the best of the best of the beauty industry, and some of those names that you threw out are kind of the heroes of the industry, and some that I've been honored to spend time with. We actually have a wonderful a guideline for our time with each other, which we're going to get into. We're going to call it the 10 Disciplines of a World-Class Service Provider. So, Masters sometimes is pure inspiration. Masters is sometimes just getting to know somebody. And other times it's all of the above, which includes how to make more money. And so obviously that title, 10 Disciplines of a World-Class Service Provider, bottom line is we got to make money.
We do. But what I think happens is I've seen hairdressers say, I want to make money. And that was kind of their guiding spirit, was money prior to the disciplines, right? And I think it works just the opposite. I think if the practices are right, money is kind of the reward for practicing consistently on a regular basis to make sure that we understand that we have to have the heart of a servant, and we have to know that that person in our chair is chosen us to do their hair, and we have to do everything it takes not to just meet their expectation, but we have to find ways to exceed it so we can then take them out of the market for looking for another hairdresser.
Well, nobody believes that there's anything wrong with wanting to make money, but when you see people who that's their driving force, that's what gets them out of bed in the morning, they might even work for you. I just want to make a lot of money. What's your advice to somebody who's just chasing the money?
Well, obviously it's important. It's so important. I think it kind of ranks right up there with toilet paper.
Okay.
You kind of got to have it, right? So
okay. So
I get that piece. But
you use that line a lot.
I don't know about a lot.
Okay.
It might not have been my first time I've used it.
Okay.
But yes, it's important. You got to have it. But I really think that when I've seen, even myself, when I've had my season in the industry where I focus on making sure that I show up to work ready to go, give it 100% day in and day out, both to my client and my coworker, it seems like those checks were the best checks I've ever had. But yet sometimes when things are a little tight and tense and you go in and say, I'm going to do this from the financial purpose, or I'm going to make sure I add on my sales today, or I'm going to make sure that, you know, my commissions are higher. That's the day you get the most cancellations, you get the most no-shows, you know. And so what I tell somebody young like that is, especially the first 5 years in the industry, learn the craft. Become an expert. You know, if you do that, there's going to be plenty of money down the road. And if you count money on the front end, I mean, some of our people on the front end, outside the education piece, their hourly wage might not be much more than somebody at McDonald's right. for the first year or 18 months.
Right.
But then 36 months, 48 months down the road, they're making more than the manager at McDonald's makes.
Right.
So we have to understand that that's an opportunity, and that's a time for us to say, hey, I have to learn my craft, and I have to learn it better, or at least as good as I can. So this way, when I put that into practice, money follows.
When you say learn your craft, I'm sure some people right now listening to this are thinking, oh, what he's talking about is technical, my technical skills. That's what I need to learn. He's telling me to be a better hairdresser technically.
Yeah.
But that's not all.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm probably
saying. So what does that mean, learn your craft?
Learn your craft. Understand what you pay. I mean, first of all, I'll let people know, especially when I look at we're talking about the youth. And when you said that, that's who you're spending your time with in your world, that's really where I love being. That's where the knowledge is on my staff. That's where we go with Belinda and I. We really listen to the young kids. And what I let them know is you got to bring your best every day. You know, you got to win the day. And that's actually one of my 10 principles, is you got to look at it daily. You got to set out your clothes the night before. You got to make sure they're pressed. You know, you got to make sure that you look like you're successful prior to being successful. So, you know, when I say learn your craft, is understanding how to say please, understanding how to say thank you, understanding how to ask for a sale, knowing how to shake hands and look somebody in the eye and thank them for their business. It's understanding body language and making sure you're looking somebody in the eye when you're having that consultation, not looking through a mirror. Because I know one thing, the clients sometimes don't realize when they leave how their hair looked. They sometimes don't know what you spoke about, but they always remember how they felt.
Right.
You know, so if we can just make sure that we connect with our hearts. You know, we talk about market share, and I say market share takes care of itself if you connect with heart share.
Right.
So, you know, that to me is where you got to learn your craft. Understanding that you're there to serve, take care of people at a level that they don't want nobody else to do their hair.
I think let's give our audience a little bit more information on who you are. So you and your wife, Belinda, you started your first salon in 1986.
Yes.
It's grown into a nationally recognized company. You have, of course, this might be old information, over 170 employees. Is that old information?
Yeah, it's probably a little shy, but, you know, that could change by the week, though, Wynn.
Okay. And could change by tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
You got over 8 different brands, correct?
Yes.
And you're based in Knoxville, Tennessee. Self Magazine. At one point named you one of the top 20 hairdressers in America. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So not only are you working your own company and multiple brands, but you're also highly visible and active and involved in the industry itself. So again, you spent the day today, which is a 4-day training other people how to become more successful. You have your own company called Strictly Business.
That's what this was here today.
Okay.
Yeah, it actually came by accident. So Strictly Business is one of the 8 brands. And when we talk about the 8 brands, it was very specific on why we went that direction. Is because we're in Knoxville, Tennessee, which for the most part is about 500,000 people with the outskirts.
Okay.
So we believe there's room for one market leader in any brand. Every city has its best restaurant, its best flower shop, its best salon, its best something, mm-hmm. right? So instead of us trying to get bandwidth with multiple locations and potentially diluting down our brand and becoming perceived as more of a chain or a franchise, we want to be very specific with having a salon, a spa, a studio, which is more of an entry-level price point, new talent environment. We have a barbershop, we have a blow-dry lounge, we have an advanced academy, and we have the business management company. So those are the 8 brands.
And all of this is in Knoxville?
Yes. It's all based in Knoxville, Tennessee, which, you know, it's one of those where, again, it's 500,000 people, but yet we're able to be a lot more things to a lot more people without confusing who we are.
So what do you say to people who say, oh, no, you have to be more specialized rather than so diverse? Some people are real specialize in this is who we are and this is only what we do. We're not everything to everybody.
Well, this is really that in its own sense because each brand is very specific on what it is.
Okay.
A barbershop does haircuts and shaves. A blow dry lounge does blow dries and upstyles.
Okay.
A salon does cuts and color. You know, so it's taken that whole specialization concept to a brand instead of just a location.
Okay. You had mentioned, so I'm going to jump all over the place. I hope you're okay with it.
That's cool. We're headdresses.
Okay, there you go. Oh, I know. I don't know why I always apologize for that because everybody follows along. You had mentioned having the heart of a servant when we were talking earlier about, you know, learning in the craft and if you don't, and chasing the money only is oftentimes not going to serve you well. And in the mix of all of that, you mentioned having the heart of a servant. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, well, you know, so many times I'll deal with people and clients kind of put them out. You know, if I see somebody having a short fuse or rolling their eyes because a client was either late or a client might not have been in the best mood, look, they go through a lot. You know, you take a 9 o'clock client, all right, first client of the day. She might be a single mom. She might have gotten up at 5:30, 6 o'clock that morning, having bathed the child, get their lunch ready, get them off to school or daycare, her go into to work early, possibly a boss who was not in a good mood, and, you know, for her to get that day started and then maybe be able to get out from work and come into the salon and get service because she needed a haircut of color. Well, there could be a million reasons why she's not in the best mood, mm-hmm. and it's my job to make sure that no matter what, I will not give them permission to not allow me to spoil them. Mm-hmm. And I think too many people
say that again because I liked how you put that.
I will not give a client permission to not allow me to spoil them, mm-hmm. you know, because that's my job. And if I'm going to be a professional at my job, I can't react to that. Mm-hmm. If anything, I got to take it and embrace it and say, now, how do I get through that? Because mm-hmm. you're not going to get around it. You know, so find a way to get through it and just make that day. You know, David Wagner, I was with him in New York last week, and, you know, you're familiar with his book. And, you know, it's so easy for us to do this, what I'm talking about, on a daily basis. And yet he had a challenge of a lifetime in his chair. Yeah. And, you know, the guy certainly stood up and shined.
Yeah. Okay, let's get into this. The 10 disciplines of a world-class service provider. First of all, who's your audience for this?
Anybody who is in a business that takes care of a consumer, or it could be restaurant, it could be hairdressing, it could be a teacher, it could be anybody who understands that we have to coexist with each other, and it, you know, it could be a good day or a bad day, and it's our choice. It's all choice.
Okay.
And it's anybody who wants to make a choice to be better.
So we're talking to the planet right now, then.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I think what happens is that you talk about going up the ladder. I think although it's not easy, I think it really gets pretty simple. And this is quite simplified. I mean, there's nothing earth-shattering here. But I do know one thing. I've had the ability to talk to people outside the beauty business that have been extremely successful in their worlds. Mm-hmm. And there's common threads between all of them. You know, whether it be professional football players, whether it be clothing designers, whether it be musicians. It's amazing what hairdressers get to do. And who they get to hang out with if they do their craft well. Mm-hmm. And you just start seeing commonalities amongst these people. And that's really what this is. This is just kind of a conglomeration of realizing that winners tend to think alike. And people that do things world class do things different than people that don't do things world class. And that's kind of how all this presentation came about.
Well, if there's somebody who's taken the time to listen to this, I have a feeling that they're hungry for this information, so let's just jump into it.
Great.
So number one is realize there is no there.
And I think that's the key to all of this. The reason why it's number one is for that purpose. I can remember when I was an assistant and I couldn't wait to get on the floor.
Right.
And the second I got on the floor, I couldn't wait to become a level three. And the second I couldn't wait to become an instructor. I couldn't wait to be... And it seems like we're always like trying to get there. You know, I mean, when you're 16, you can't wait to become 18 so you can drive. And then when you're 18, you can't wait to become 21 so you can drink. And, you know, I think we waste a lot of time chasing the dream or chasing, you know, in Italian is a saying that they see Americans and they see the way we live and they say, you know, that we're always chasing the monster instead of just stopping and kind of smelling the coffee, right? So there is no there comes, in my opinion, that once I realize there's no there, I'm able to enjoy the moment now and know that I have to keep striving to eventually get wherever there might be, right? I used to, in business, it'd be like, why can't we get our act together? Why do we have redos? Why aren't we running a better business? Why aren't we this? And I kept thinking, someday, if we just put all that together, it'd be so easy. Well, yeah, right. There is no there.
Right. You're just incrementally, day by day, getting better and getting better.
And that's the goal. You know, there's a Japanese word, Kaizen, K-A-I-Z-E-N. And not only is it a Japanese word, but it's a Japanese philosophy. Mm-hmm. And it means constant improvement.
Okay.
And wherever we are today, if we some days are better than others. Some days we improve a little. Some days we lose. We don't even win the day. But if I'll strive daily is to wake up, and when my feet hit the floor vertically, and I thank my maker for giving me a chance at this one day, you know, I don't want to disappoint again. I want to make sure that I seize that moment and maximize my opportunity.
I find it intriguing that here we are going to get into what it takes to be a world-class service provider, and number one is kind of enjoy the journey. You know, quit. I've kind of learned that lesson, especially being a dad. I have a 2.5-year-old daughter, and I've purposely have told people, if I say this, slap me. You know, I can't wait till she goes to school. I can't wait till she walks. I can't wait till I can wait.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to freeze her at this month. You know, I want to freeze her at this age and this age. And so.
And you know the beauty of that, too, is, Belinda, we're the parents of five.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point in our lives, we had a child in college, high school, middle school, elementary school, and preschool.
Wow.
And, you know, you embrace all that, and the whole freezing and wishing it could stay there, I'm smiling right now because I know the feeling as a parent and what that's like.
So number two is treat every client like a first visit.
You know, I worked for a fella in New Jersey by the name of Joe Vitalupo. And Joe, he was one of these guys, he was kind of a philosopher. Neighborhood Italian guy, they had life figured out, right? And he says, you know what, kid, he was my mentor. He says, you want to know the key to the beauty business, kid? I was like, yeah, I'm on the edge of my seat. What is it? What is it? He said, it's really simple. If you get a young girl in your chair, you treat her like she's your kid sister. If you get a girl at your age, take care of her like she's your girlfriend. If there's a woman older than you in your chair, treat her like she's your mother. And if you got an old lady in your chair, take care of it like it's your own grandmother.
Oh.
And he says, you do that, you'll be a busy hairdresser.
Wow.
You know, and I think sometimes we forget the magic of the relationship that's in our chair. Mm. You know, we sometimes refer to it as our 430 or our full foil highlight as opposed to Mrs. So-and-so, who is somebody's daughter or mother or grandmother. And if we come from that spirit, I think we'll always treat them right. But as far as treating everybody like a first visit, the reason why that's really one of mine that I own, because I got taken to school by a hairdresser that was less than 6 months out of school. And she was my assistant at the time. And I had a client who I was, actually, she wasn't my client, Alex Haley, who wrote the book Roots back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, his girlfriend's name was Edie Ellis, and Edie lived in Cincinnati, Ohio. And when Edie moved to Knoxville, she was the anchor woman on NBC. And she was a beautiful African-American woman. And I wanted to do Edie's hair, and I had done most of the newscaster's hair. And when she moved to Knoxville, I sent her a note and said I would love to do it. And she sent back and said, Frank, one of my very good friends is my hairdresser. And, you know, I, if and when I need you, maybe I'll give you a call someday. So 2 years later, you know, I see her out, and we become friends, but I still wasn't doing her hair. 2 years later, they called me and said, Edie Ellis is on the phone. This is on a Thursday night. She says, hey, we're having to go out of town. I don't have time to get back to Cincinnati. Can you do my hair? So finally, I get my opportunity. So I tell my assistant, I said, listen, we're coming in early tomorrow morning for Edie, all right, because I'm booked solid. There's no time. And look, dress your best, right? We'll be ready to go. I have my products out, my tools out. And, you know, I'll give her a consultation before you shampoo her. And, man, if you talk about a textbook consultation, I was spot on, right?
Of course you were.
I was like, it should have been film, man, right? And we'd be selling that. And so I tell my assistant, give her the best shampoo she ever had. And then I'm giving her the best haircut she ever had, so I think. And at the end of it, she says, Frank, my hair's never looked so good. And Edie leaves. And you talk about feeling like I'm 10 foot two. I'm feeling like the man, right? And my assistant says, Frank, that was awesome. And I said, wasn't that awesome? I said, that was great. And we're both excited. She said, can I just ask you one question? I said, sure. What is it, babe? She says, how come you don't treat everybody like Edie Ellis? And I said, wow, man. I went from feeling like super high to my day has been blown. And she was so right, you know, because who am I to treat Edie Ellis, who, because she's prominent in society, and by the way, was free, right? Right. And the week before, I might have had a 16-year-old kid that saved her birthday money or Christmas money to come and get a haircut with us and maybe not get treated as good as Edie Ellis got treated. So it was that day that I committed that if somebody, whoever it is, comes in my chair, I'm going to give them my very best, no matter what their title is, no matter what their job is, no matter what their name is.
How long ago was that?
It's got to be over 15 years ago.
Right. And how many clients do you see in a day?
Well, currently, I'm only doing hair about 4 or 5 days a month now.
Right.
And, you know, I see somewhere between 10 and 12. When I'm on the floor, I'm on the floor.
Right.
You know?
So to do that 12 times a day, you're treating that client like this is their first visit and that they are a rock star or whatever you want to call them. What does that take out of you to be able to do that?
I don't think it takes anything out of me. I think it puts something into me.
Wow.
You know, I think energy creates energy, right? Yeah. So whatever you put out is what comes back at you. I know that I feel as refreshed at the end of a day as I do when I start now. Mm. You know, it's one of them where if you could just get them to smile or just get them to giggle and just make them feel good about themselves. And it's really not hard to do. Mm-hmm. I think it's a decision. Mm-hmm. I think it takes a bit of focus. And it's a want. You know, I think it takes way more will than skill to be able to pull that off.
More will than skill.
Yeah, I think skill is overrated. Mm-hmm. My good friend, you know, Gino Stampora, mm-hmm. is probably the planet's worst hairdresser of all time.
And he'll tell you that.
All right. And that's why I say it. But I'll tell you what. If you tell me right now you got to start a salon tomorrow and you get to pick one guy on the planet to start it with, I'd pick Gino Stampora because you talk about a guy that can make people feel good.
Right.
I mean, he's the epitome of understanding that when somebody comes in, they're the superstar, not the hairdresser.
Right. I think it takes you back to what you had said in the very beginning, the heart of a servant. And, you know, when you truly are in service of other people and you're putting it into them, that's what you're getting back.
When I think it's twofold, too, I think when you're a salon owner, you got to have that same heart of a servant for your staff. You know, and my wife, Belinda, is probably the epitome of not only having the heart of a servant for staff. What I giggle with her is she could be doing the chief of staff at the University of Tennessee Hospital, and then she could be doing a cheerleader from the local middle school right after her. There's no difference. Mm. Matter of fact, she don't even know that woman was the chief of staff at UT Hospital. Mm. And it doesn't matter to her.
Right.
So a lot of this I've learned from watching her do it day in and day out. You talk about somebody that brings it every day. She's still behind the chair because she chooses to be. Certainly doesn't have to be. But, I mean, she is giggling and cackling at 9 in the morning if she's with them, and she's doing the same thing at 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? You can work a 12-hour day and go home feeling energized because of what you're talking about right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a mindset. Yeah. I think it's a choice.
Yeah.
I really do.
It's absolutely a choice.
Yeah.
You know, to choose to believe that this client is an interruption of your day, that this client is difficult, you're going to go home exhausted.
Yeah, you sure will.
Yeah. Okay, number three is strengthen their weaknesses.
That's what winners tend to do when we look at world-class service providers in anything. I think we got to identify our strengths, and I think we not only identify them, I think what most people do, they tend to continue to strengthen their strengths, and they ignore their weaknesses. And to do something world-class, which is the topic here, you can't be a world-class athlete, you can't be a world-class chef, you can't be world-class anything, and have weaknesses. Now, as we're going up the ranks, you know, whether it be, you take a high school athlete, they might do some things really well and some things weak, and if they don't strengthen that weakness, they're not going to college on a scholarship. And if they certainly don't strengthen their weaknesses by then, they're not going to go become a pro athlete. Mm-hmm. And I think this industry has been too casual about allowing mediocrity to sort of become, I don't want to say commonplace, but allow it to be accepted. I think if we're going to be market leaders and we're going to be world class, we got to constantly not only identify our weaknesses, we got to be doing something about them to make sure that they either dissipate or at least diminish.
When you talk about world class, well, let me ask you, you're not talking about people who charge a certain amount of money and above. So your message is just as much for the person who's charging the least amount of money for a haircut as the person who's charging the most amount of money. Is that accurate?
That's so accurate that I actually never thought about it as what somebody charged. When I think of this process, because of our strictly business, mm-hmm. we're dealing with salons in Butte, Montana, or Wilshire Boulevard. Mm-hmm. So price to me is really, you know, there's just so many economics and decisions that have to come into what we charge. But yet there's always room for a market leader in any town. So, you know, it might be where somebody who's getting $25 a haircut in Des Moines, Iowa, might be actually be able to profit more than somebody who's getting $100 a haircut in Beverly Hills. Okay. So, yeah, I never think of price. I think of, are you going to be the best at what you do in your area?
It doesn't matter what you're charging.
I don't think so. I don't think you could be underpriced, you know, to keep the lights on, because it's kind of all mathematics.
Right.
But I don't think price has anything to do with it.
Well, I wanted to bring that up because I think people just have a habit of excusing themselves from the information that you're sharing. Well, he's talking about world class, and I'm not the most expensive hairdresser in town, so therefore this does not apply to me. So you know, I never want people listening to the Masters to think, oh, this does not apply to me.
Yeah, I love that you said that because I don't even think I'm the most expensive haircut in Knoxville.
Okay. Well, Edie told me you're free, so there you go.
Yeah, I was for her.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
You know, that was a lesson I learned in Minneapolis, Minnesota. There was the International Hair Color Exchange mm-hmm. back in the day.
Mm-hmm. And I remember it well.
It was obviously the best colorists in the world, for that matter, because mm-hmm. my wife was actually performing at this one, as was Annie Humphreys. Mm-hmm. And Annie Humphreys was by far the most prolific colorist on the planet at the time.
I think she just won an award a couple of weeks ago in London at the Alternative Hair Show.
I just saw something.
Yeah, Vivian was telling me about it. Annie Humphreys, for those who don't know who she is, and how could you not, she was Vidal's right-hand colorist.
And
brilliant, brilliant woman.
For decades.
Yeah.
I mean, she really, really, I've never seen her do a head anywhere that wasn't spectacular.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about somebody who strengthened her strengths and didn't have any weaknesses, that would be Annie. Yeah. But I can remember she was doing color, and she had Tim with her who did all her haircuts, right? Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a haircutting convention. But Tim was pre-cutting her heads or post-cutting her heads, depending on which models they were. But what I found interesting that day is because most of the industry at the top might be specialized, but I would say probably 90% of the industry, if I had to guess, is generalist, where they cut in color.
Right.
But what I found that day is all the people that were best at hair color were watching Annie do hair color. And all the people that were best at haircutting was watching Tim cut
Tim
hair.
Tim Hartley, right.
And I said, well, here we are, the opportunity of somebody who's not great at color, all right, who's might cut hair extremely well is the opportunity of seeing Annie and vice versa.
Right.
But yet it was obvious to me that day that we don't do that. It's just something that we gravitate to. And I don't think we should ignore those to continue strengthening strengths, but I think weaknesses are unacceptable.
Huh. I got to have that same philosophy when I'm at the gym. The things that I don't like to do is what I do first. I hate doing legs and I hate doing abs, and so I do them first. Because I used to say, well, I'll do them at the end, which meant I never did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we want to gravitate towards what's easier for us or what we enjoy the most and ignore and stay away from the things that are our weaknesses.
Well, as I'm looking over at you, your arms are crossed and your muscles are popping. I'm thinking, that guy, he don't have too many weaknesses, man. You're looking good, brother.
Thank you. So number four, to be a world-class service provider is don't let their clients beat them to the future.
You know, not letting your client beat you to the future today, I think, is more imperative than ever before because they have such access to information. You know, I think clients sometimes ask, they'll come in for consultations, and they might know the answers to the questions they're asking. They just wanted to see if we know.
Oh, well.
You know, and I think if you're going to be world-class or if you're going to be a market leader hairdresser, you got to bring information to the consumer today.
Be specific. Give us an example of what you're talking about.
All right. So somebody comes in and says, hey, what's happening with hair color? What would you do with my hair color? Mm-hmm. And probably the best thing at the moment is as far as the buzzword or the technique that's prominent in hair color is balayage.
Okay.
All right. And foil is sort of taking a back seat now. Foil is kind of the new frosting cap, if you would.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Foil came into play, the frosting cap went away.
Okay.
And what's going on now with balayage is foil's kind of going away. And I think, you know, consumers see it, they're reading about it, they're hearing about it. And if you're not able to offer that to them or at least explain to them that you think that would be a good fit for them, if it is, you know, they're going to see you as somebody who's just kind of tired and doing yesterday's work. And, you know, they might say, trim me up, or they might say, just, you know, touch up my color. But they know it's time to look for another hairdresser.
So how do you keep yourself, how does Belinda keep herself, how do you keep your staff ahead of the clients, so to speak?
Well, you know, the same thing that got you there is what keeps you there, and that's education. I think we got to continue to get better at it. Just today, Belinda was teaching balayage at the academy, and we had education going on at the B-Style Blow Dry Lounge, and I'm out in California doing a business management seminar all in one day because I saw it on Facebook before I met you in the elevator today. And I'm thinking that's enough education for a month right there, and we're doing it in one day. And that's been the backbone of Salon Visage and its companies through the years is that, you know, we kind of feel pretty excited about owning the word education. And that's the only way it's going to continue. And right now, the velocity of change and shift is so fast that classes have to happen more often. And it's our job as an owner to make sure that our hairdressers are well-equipped and furnished with the right verbiage and the right techniques. I don't see it as their job. It's their job to do it, but it's our job to bring it to them.
Got it. Number five, what do you do with your other 8 hours?
You know, what do you do with your other 8 hours? It's an interesting number nowadays. It's really when if we almost look at days as three-thirds. A third we're working, a third we're sleeping. What do you do with your other third? Because we don't really sleep for eight anymore, and we don't really work for eight anymore. But at the same time, if we're sleeping, we're working. That's pretty much a given, right?
Right.
At some point. What do you do with the rest of that time? And this is, talk about young staff and talk about young hairdressers that might be listening, is what are you becoming during that time? You know, it's easy to be a couch potato. You know, it's a lot harder to be working on mannequins after work. But if you're looking to be world class, that's probably what you should be doing.
Right.
You know, talk about a new class or a new technique. You should be doing it over and over and over. And over. I'll do some techniques at a hair show and a hairdresser might say, oh, I've seen that before. I say, that's great that you've seen it, but can you do it? You know, I saw Mickey Mantle hit home runs as a kid, but I couldn't hit home run.
Right, right, right.
You know, so again, I think we're too lackadaisical about not forcing excellence.
Who did I hear that joke from? How many hairdressers does it take to teach a haircut? 100. One to do the cut and 99 to stand there and say, oh, I could do that.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're not.
No,
but
yeah.
You're not doing it.
You're not doing it. Okay. And the thing is, are you doing it at a level that's phenomenal? Are you doing it at a level that people are going to come back for it? Because really, when you do excellent work, I mean, you're too busy. I ask a hairdresser, how many of you have too many clients? That should be the goal. You should have too many clients. Your clients should not be in a market for looking for a hairdresser.
Right.
You know, anymore, a client leaves a salon after a visit, there's no guarantee they're coming back.
Right.
So that's my goal, is to make them just understand that I got my hairdresser.
So what's the advice that you give people, especially new people coming in the industry, on what to do with those other 8 hours?
Well, it's twofold. The ones coming in, I think you got to continue to practice hairdressing, practice your consultations, practice in giving the client the right to say no. You know, we talk about retail product, and a lot of it's talked about and perceived as we're trying to ask them to sell something.
Right.
And that's not true. We're very product-centric in our company, but the reason is because if the clients don't have the right product to take home to recreate the haircut you gave them, at the end of the day, there's no way they're going to come back to you for cut and color. You know, for example, if the client got a new red head of hair and you didn't give it a right shampoo that was delicate enough to treat a red hair or red hair color, and they go out and buy 3-minute Australian horsetail shampoo and it lasts 3 shampoos, who's going to get blamed? The shampoo or the fact that you didn't color the hair well?
Right.
So, you know, all these practices have to be practiced. You know, we look at attorneys or doctors, we say they have a practice. Well, you know, somebody was their first surgery. Somebody was their first case. But at the same time, hairdressers tend to think, okay, I've done one like Bob, I got it. I've done graduation, I got it. I've done layers, I've got it. Bring me a mannequin that shows me that you're getting better every week.
Got it.
All right, so the young hairdressers, the confidence of a consultation takes years. So if you're doing hair 1 year, what makes you think you shouldn't be practicing that in your other 8 hours?
So when you have new people that want to work for your company, do you spell it out for them, the commitment to ongoing education? And do you have people say, ooh, that's too much for me? Or
yeah. Well, you know what's funny? I'm a little bit more of a kind of, I'll tell people, hey, man, you want to work here because we do this, we do this, we do that. This is why you want to work here. My wife says, Frank, you got to quit doing that. You got to tell them why they probably don't want to work here. You got to do everything you can
to talk them out of it.
Talk them out of it,
right,
man.
Okay.
Because you're making it sound so glorious, and it's hard work.
Right.
So she'll say, you know what? I'm not sure you want to work here because we do a lot of education. I'm not sure because, you know what? We work hard around here. Now, it'll be fun. We ask you to take it real serious. We won't take ourselves too serious. We'll have some fun doing it. But, and you know what's interesting is you got to, it begins at hire. You got to let them know what they're signing up for.
Right.
You know, so you can't put a round peg in a square hole. And so many people, you know, I hate the fact that so many people go to hairdressing school because they don't want to go to college. Well, that's fine, but it ain't going to be any easier.
Right.
You know, because in a world-class salon, the expectations are going to be as high as somebody who's going to Harvard or Yale. I mean, people that go to Harvard or Yale, the expectation of that institution is a lot higher than somebody that's going to a local community college. Mm-hmm. Well, if we're going to be world-class, what the expectations of you working here are going to be a lot different than if you're going to go work at the mall. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's just we're on two different pages.
Right.
You know, so I've always said when there's really three types of hairdressers. There's hairdressers that do it for a hobby. Then there's hairdressers that do it for a job. And then there's hairdressers that want to do it for a career. So we have to make it really clear that if you're not a career-minded hairdresser, these disciplines will sound very foreign to you and probably too hard to accomplish. But if somebody's really wanting to be career-oriented and world-class, this is just kind of the blueprint to get you there.
Got it. Number 6 of the 10 disciplines of a world-class service provider, differentiate or die. And I've used that myself, you know, delegate or die, have meetings or die. You're saying differentiate or die.
Yeah.
So you're being pretty strong on this one.
Well, I think anymore we better have a point of difference. You know, there's just so many levels of perceived salons and, you know, between chains and people that aren't even in the industry anymore. And now it's suite rentals and booth rental and all. You got to have a point of difference that you can articulate to the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Because the line is blurred to the average consumer today on what a professional salon is anymore. I mean, you got people putting up billboards. It's just crazy what's going on today. And I think there's, again, it might be getting small at the top, but you got to be different and you got to be better. So when I say differentiate or die, what is your point of difference? I've always heard that you should be able to put your point of difference on a bumper sticker. You should be able to say in a very short sentence who you are and what makes you different. You know, I know of a company. I'm from New Jersey, the New York area. I grew up in New Jersey. And back in the day, there was the Bronx Ice Cream Company. Now, most people never heard of the Bronx Ice Cream Company, okay? But it was around the 20s, it was around the 30s, it was around the 40s, and it was around the 50s. And it was considered the best ice cream in the whole Northeast. But then in the 60s, it started taking a bit of a nosedive. It was older. It hadn't reinvented itself. It was a good product, but it was kind of just going to the wayside. And one of the younger family members of this brand is telling them that they got to do things different. And the old guard didn't want to hear it. We've always done it this way, and If people don't like it, blah, blah, blah. It was one of those stories, uphill in the snow. And the grandkid, I think it was the grandkid, said, look, we got to change our name. We got to change the package. We have to do this. The product's great. The product's great. So the old guard got so tired of hearing it and said, you know what, we're done. Do it. We're good. So the kid turns around and finds a name for this company that was made up, gets an artist to do a phenomenal package, and all of a sudden sales start going through the roof. And you and I know that company is Häagen-Dazs. All right? Oh. So, and what's interesting, it's got a Scandinavian name. It's in 50 countries, of which none are the Scandinavian countries.
Oh, wow.
But they had to do something different. And there's so many stories out there of reinvention, and we have to do the same thing. You know, we have to keep moving and shaking and doing things different. And we got to let the clients know why it's better.
Walt Disney said, if you want to be successful, look around, see what everybody else is doing, and then do something different.
Totally.
So, yeah. And you said you ought to be able to put it on a bumper sticker. So tell me, give me examples of what would be on that bumper sticker that would differentiate people.
For us in Knoxville, Tennessee, and we did it boldly back in the day, we were Knoxville's only departmentalized salon. And that just sounds like a statement, but it created a lot of chatter. What's that mean?
Okay.
Well, we have experts that cut and we have experts that color.
Okay.
And I got quoted in a magazine one time, and they almost were trying to put down the fact of, you know, somebody would, why would you want to be separate, you know, to that point. Mm-hmm. And I almost said it in a reactive way. I said, heart surgeons don't do brain surgery.
Okay.
And that caught on, and it became a headline in a magazine.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And that kind of got us going even further.
Hmm.
You know, but we did a campaign one time, talk about a bumper sticker. We said, Salon Visage, swing cuts, custom color. We had clients.
Swing cuts,
custom color.
Custom color. Okay.
Now, the reason why we said swing cuts is at the time, mall hair was in with curling irons, big hair.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I came from here down to Tennessee, I don't know how to do that kind of hair. Nor did I want to know how to do that kind of hair. Mm-hmm. My work was very Sassoon oriented. It was really good haircuts that moved.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I would say, look, I want your head to swing. I want your head to swing. So, and I was not going to cave into that pressure of doing hair that I didn't believe
that everybody else was doing.
Everybody was doing it, right?
Right.
So, you know, it got really difficult there where I was borderline that should I do this or not? And I just hung in there long enough, and it became swing cuts, swing mm-hmm. cuts, swing cuts. And then we had to put great hair color on it. So we did the swing cuts custom color campaign. We had people calling from 100 miles away wanting swing cut and custom color. They didn't even know what they were asking for.
So you sold it so much.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting in the room where you had a conference today, and there's all kinds of different brands and different price structures and people from all over the country who are here today, and they're thinking, okay, how do I differentiate myself? Are they raising their hands and you're giving them specific advice? How are you helping people figure that out?
Well, basically, Salon Visage is the model for this process here, so we just let them know the things we do. The last thing I did before we got together today, I took them on a tour through all our locations.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just trying to influence people to think differently. Okay. And they got to come back tomorrow with what they're going to do different.
Got it.
All right? So a lot of it was, today was the one thing we went from, and this was Salon Visage, we went from being a really great cut-and-color salon that happened to sell retail to a complete flip that we are now a retail environment that happens to do great cuts and color.
Okay.
And that just sounds like verbiage,
mm-hmm.
but at the end of the day, all the processes that tie to that, the environment, the aesthetic setup, the verbiage and scripts that we use, all go to that principle that we're a retail environment, because consumer behavior is consumer behavior. And we tend to think that we're doing something that's almost intruding on people when we're trying to get them to understand that they need home maintenance products to take care of their hair.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole thing we're doing with differentiated dyes, we're getting them to discover, number one, are they different? And if not, what do they need to do to be different?
Got it.
So I'm not giving them the solutions. I'm just prodding them to think.
Okay. Number seven is reverse engineer their career.
Most people that I've had the ability to, as a matter of fact, I was on a plane last night and had this very similar conversation. I was sitting next to a surgeon that was flying home here, lives in Bel Air, and he was wanting to know if I knew the New England-Denver score. And I said, well, why, who do you want to win? And he says, I want New England. He says, who do you want? I said, I want Denver. He says, why are you on Denver? I said, because I cut Peyton Manning's hair, and I've cut his hair for years. He said, that's interesting. I'm the one that operated on Tom Brady. So we get into this conversation, and he knew Peyton, right? Talk about 2 degrees of separation.
Right, right.
So, and he knows Peyton also. He says, you know, those two guys are so unique because they don't do anything by circumstance. Everything is planned out. Everything is calculated. And I only say all that to say this, because when I talk about engineering your career, I've taught young hairdressers how to do this, where instead of just coming in every day and rolling up your sleeves and have the heart of a servant and work your tail off and hope at the end of the year you hit kind of a goal, why don't we figure out what you really want to do? What is your financial goal? This is where we talk about money before. It is important, right? So what is it and what's realistic that you're looking to make? And then are you willing to do all the things that you need to do to get there? You know, it's no different that if you and I went into the store of life tomorrow with a shopping cart, we can go up and down all those aisles in the store of life, and we could take anything we want off those shelves and put it in a cart, as long as when we got to the front, we were willing to pay the price. So when they're going to reverse engineer their career, look, are you looking to be a $75,000 a year hairdresser? If you are, let's reverse that out. What's it take? Are you going to be a 4-day or 5-day a week hairdresser? All right. If so, what do you have to do from a service standpoint? What do you have to do from an add-on standpoint? What do you have to do from a pre-book percentage standpoint to make sure you have enough clients that are seeing you on a 4 or 5 week cycle? All right. What are you going to do from any standpoint that gets you back into that number? And I've seen young kids that don't know how to figure this out. You just show them the way, they'll roll up their sleeves and kill it, man, and make it happen. And that's what excites me. I got some girls on my staff who I opened their first checking account with, or showed somebody how to fill out an application for a mortgage.
Right.
And you talk about getting excited, because these hairdressers, I don't think there's a hairdresser on my staff or yours, Wynn, that don't want to do the right thing. They just don't always know how to do it.
See, I love that message. Because sometimes some leaders are thinking, oh, they're motivated to piss me off.
Oh.
No, they're not. They want to do the right thing. Show them exactly what that looks like. Tell them exactly what a clean station looks like. Tell them exactly what being on time looks like. Tell them exactly what being a world-class service provider looks like.
You know, they'll
rather than assume that they don't want to, or rather than assume that they're just out to get you.
You know, it's one of those things that I've hung around with a lot of bitter salon owners, you know, and I don't want to put down any colleagues, but, man, I look them in the eye as friends and say, why don't you just get better instead of bitter?
Yeah.
You know, and I'll call them out, like, behind the scenes because they're friends. You can.
Yeah.
That's what friends do. Say, dude, you have so much to be grateful for, man. Just quit. Just reinvent yourself and get this thing going and kicking again. You know, I mean, people are beautiful. They want to do the right thing. I know they do, man. And when they do, that's where that whole loyalty factor comes in. You show somebody how to get to places they couldn't get by themselves, they'll stand by. They'll fall on a sword for you.
I like this one. It's not just throwing pasta at the wall and hoping that it sticks. It's like, let's really, really engineer this thing so that you can get to where you want to go.
I thought you were getting personal because I'm Italian there with the pasta thing.
That's why I used that one. I thought maybe that one would work for you.
That resonates for sure.
But there are a lot of people that they haven't planned this out. They don't know where they want to end up.
Yeah. Well, we do it with ourselves. You know, we reverse engineer our company. Matter of fact, there's a term, forced bottom line accounting. And a lot of
forced bottom line accounting.
Forced bottom line accounting is really reverse engineering your P&L statement. And before we use this process, when I'd get my P&L statement sometime in February, and instead of looking at each page, I would just go to the last page.
Right.
And I would go to the bottom, and I would hope there were no parentheses around the bottom number.
Right.
Right? Now, we don't do that anymore. We reverse engineer it. We dictate what the profit's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
On the front end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if I'll just say this year it's going to be 14%.
Okay.
14% is the number one bill that we pay.
That's money in your pocket.
And then we'll figure out how to run the company on the rest.
Got it.
See, and it's the same concept to a young hairdresser or even a middle-aged hairdresser, doesn't matter. You got to you got to commit to what you want it to be, and then you'll figure out what it takes to create the right actions behind that.
Got it. Number 8 says, don't drive their BMW to work. What does that one mean?
That means no bitching, no moaning, no whining. BMW.
Oh, BMW. Got it.
No bitching, moaning, and whining. That's what that stands for. You know, I know one thing. I don't know any winners in anything that complain. You know, Jerry Gordon out of Chicago. We've been with Jerry for 30 years. I've never heard the man complain about one thing, ever. And it resonates. It's like, wait a second. This guy's just always upbeat. He's always positive. And you look at his career. I mean, he's driven Ferraris in countries and raced them. And he's sat with kings and mountains, sat on top of mountains with Tibetan monks. And the guy's career is beyond anything that we could ever imagine. And when I look at that, it boils down to something very simple. You cannot make excuses and money at the same time.
Ooh, that's a good one. Say that again.
You cannot make excuses and money at the same time.
Wow.
So
that's a good one.
You're doing one or the other. And think about your break room. Who's in the back complaining?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
What do we call we call those people spoons, because they're back there stirring it up.
Stirring it up, yeah.
Right,
so
right.
It's well said. So yeah. So we say, don't drive your BMW to work.
BMW stands for bitching, moaning, and whining.
Yep.
I love that.
We got a button like the no sign that goes through.
Right, right.
We got BMW. BMWs with a no sign, man.
That's great. Number 9 is win the day.
You know, we talk about reverse engineering, and we talk about like, what do you want to do this year? You know, there's all these New Year's resolutions everybody makes.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens at the end of a New Year's resolution by January or February? You're like gone.
That's what I like to say is like the gym was packed January 2nd.
Yeah, right. And done. By February, it's over.
Right.
I think a year is just far too long.
Right.
You know, quarters for hairdressers for the most part. I mean, are very excited, very energetic. So we try to break it down to instead of being a year or a quarter or a month, let's take each day as it comes, man.
Mm-hmm.
And let's figure out what it's going to take from a number standpoint, what it's going to take from a services standpoint to win the day. Because if you win the day, you'll win the week, and then you'll win the month, the quarter, and the year.
Okay, so when that applying win the day to your staff members, does that mean that you're coaching them on a daily basis, or on a daily basis they're seeing their scores, meaning their numbers? I mean, how does that translate for your staff?
We show every day when in the dispensary and in the break room, we show the previous day's numbers, and they're all individual, so they're just having to beat their best.
Okay.
All right, we show the day before's numbers and what the numbers are inside that pay period, whether they're on or off track.
Okay.
All right, so every day they'll come in and they'll look at. It's a common practice now. The first thing they do when they come in is they look at yesterday's numbers. It's culture.
Right.
It's called. It's behavior. And it's something that people will do, you know? And it's not negotiable with us. It's a non-negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
You got to win the day. And we have to, as owners, to make sure that they have the tools that are necessary, both from an information standpoint, a resources standpoint, and a support standpoint, that they have the ability to get that done.
Great. And number 10 is become a dinner party story.
Become a dinner party story is very dear to me because it actually happened to me. It happens to a lot of us, but we sometimes don't recognize it because it has nothing to do with hairdressing. If I rewind the clock right now, 18 years ago, because my wife was pregnant with our daughter, Sydney, I went to Sydney, Australia to do business management seminars. And I started off in Sydney, and I go around the country, and I come back to Sydney. It's time to leave. And the fella at the door says, Frank, would you prefer I get you a taxi cab or a car service? And I said, you know what, I'll take a cab because I figured the car service was too expensive. I didn't need to be spending money. I'm getting ready to leave the country. And I wasn't going very far. I was just going to get my check from the manufacturer I was working for. So he says, no, it won't be any more money. Let me get you car service. And he blows the whistle and come ripping around the corner when it's this little shiny black car that is going to take me to where I'm going. And the guy pops out of the car, and he shakes my hand. He says, hi, my name's Rodney. What's yours? I said, my name's Frank. I said, thank you, Rodney. He gets my luggage, puts it in the trunk. We get in the car. And inside this car was not only was the outside shiny, the inside was very clean.
And I'm sitting in the back, and the sun's shining through. And it's a very exciting day because I'm going to collect my money, and then I'm going back home. And I had just toured the whole country, so I'm pretty wiped out. But I'm excited. So he says, Frank, let me ask you, would your preference be jazz music, classical music, or rock and roll? So I said, you know what, I like jazz. So he puts on jazz, and it happens to be David Sanborn wailing away on his saxophone while I'm sitting in his car on a sunshiny day, and it smells good, and I'm feeling pretty good about it. And it wasn't a minute later, he says, is your preference the front page, the financial section, or do you prefer the sports page of today's newspaper? So I said, well, I'm a sports guy, give me the sports. So now in the back seat, listening to David Sanborn reading the sports page. And I'm feeling pretty good about it because I'm going to collect my money. And all of a sudden, there's something nudging the newspaper. And I drop my newspaper, and there's this shiny silver tray with bubblegum mints and chocolate kisses on it. And I'm thinking, this is crazy. Matter of fact, I thought I was getting punked. I'm looking around for a camera inside the cab. Like, this is crazy. So I take some of all the above, and I put them in my pocket because I know I got a long ride home. And I no sooner do that, and the guy stops. And he says, we're here. He gets out of the cab, gets my luggage, and I'm saying, hey, how much is that? He says, $4. So I get the money out of my pocket, and typically I'd trade up to $5, but I'm thinking this guy was good. I'll give him $10. I said, matter of fact, he was so good, I'll give him $20. So I give him $20 on a $4 cab fee, $16 tip, and felt good doing it. All right? Now, this guy, talk about the heart of a servant. So he pulls off, shakes my hand goodbye, and I'm there with my luggage, and I'm going into the building where I'm going to get my money, and I go up to the 7th floor, the elevator's open, and Mary, who I've been talking to for months, arranging the trip, looks at me and says, hi, Frank. I said, yeah. I said, Mary? She says, yeah. She said, you all right? I said, why? She said, you look a little stunned. I said, Mary, I'm very stunned. I just had the most unbelievable cab ride I've ever had in my life. She said, Rodney, right? I said, wait a second. I'm in Sydney, Australia with millions of people. How do you know it was Rodney? She said, Rodney's the most famous cab driver in all of Australia. Matter of fact, word has it, he only works 6 months a year, makes over $250,000, spends the other 6 months on the island of Mallorca with his family.
Wow.
You know how many times I told Rodney's story at a dinner party? All right? That's world class. Right. And we have the ability, if this guy could do this with a little shiny black cab in Sydney, Australia, why can't we do this with a shiny silver scissor in the United States of America?
That's great. I have a couple of questions for you. Why'd they choose you for president of Intercofure?
I'm kind of the guy that's been around with the old guard and the new guard. Okay. And I'm guessing at this only because, you know, I mean, I don't know exactly why, but Lois Christie, who's the current president, and the board of directors who voted unanimous for me to be the guy, I think they feel like my experience and understanding of where the organization came from and what it stands for and represents, but also where it needs to go, because things are changing in the climate of hairdressing today, puts me in a position, because of my travels through the road, because of the diversity of Belinda and I's businesses, I think the dynamics are such that they feel like my exposure and experience puts us in the best position to lead it. That's my best guess, Wynn.
You say that there's changes that they feel like you can help navigate through. What are some of the things that bring you the most hope in what's happening in the beauty industry today?
Well, I alluded earlier to the whole fragmentation piece, and it's really changing the climate of the average commission salon as we know it. And because of the diversification of our brands, we tend to understand the dynamics of each branch of that. And I think, I don't know about changes as much as continuation of making sure that this whole leadership thing at the top continues to move forward in a way that doesn't allow us to weaken or dilute as an industry.
So what are you most hopeful about?
Hopeful, two things, and I said it last week and when I was up there, and I have to kind of capsulize things or understand what my intentions are, and I think we do two things. We have to certainly make sure that we honor the past of Intercoiffure because it's absolutely brilliant. And not only honor it, but I think we got to get people to know more about it, but we really have to embrace the future. The industry is at a point where if we don't band together as a top-end hairdressers and salon owners. It's continuously getting bid into by outside forces and sources. Mm-hmm. And I think it's time that we not only band together, but we kind of got to roll up our sleeves and go to work, because we've had our head in the sand as an industry to let outside people come in. And the point of entry to some of these other, whether it be nails or eyebrows or men's barbershops, and you got people that aren't professional hair people that are coming into the industry and not honoring it the way I think it needs to be honored. So I'm going to go to work to make sure that we as a unit march forward.
I like what you said, not only about moving forward, but honoring our past. Almost every name that you threw out today, thankfully, I knew who they were when you said Annie Humphreys and you said Tim Hartley and you mentioned these people. And that felt good to me, like, oh, okay, yeah, I did my research. I did my history lessons to honor the people who got us to where we are today. And I think that that's so, so important.
You know, there's not many of them. When you think about it, it's one of those that I think in – it used to be the 80-20 rule. I really think it's the 90-10 rule now when you think about it. And,
right.
And, you know, it's people like you. When you say you've been doing this for 20 years and spreading this kind of word, when I'm honored to sit here with you to know that we're like-minded in the sense that if we just do the right things for the right reasons, good things happen. Mm-hmm.
You said moving forward, because you had made a comment earlier that you and your wife love to talk to the new kids, the new people in the beauty industry, and that's where a lot of your knowledge comes from. Share that a little bit more. What do you mean by that?
Well, I
love hearing that from Carmen De Pasquale. You know, Carmen, you said, you know, I just looked at the new ones. He's like, I'm old. I'm left to myself, I'm done. But it's my new kids is what he said.
Yeah, Carm's great. He's another Jersey paisan.
Oh, yeah.
So I adore that guy.
Me too.
I think he's done so much good for the beauty business that we need to honor him as well. What Belinda and I tend to do when we travel and do these seminars is, again, we'll always connect with the people we know. Mm-hmm. But Gene Juarez, back in the day, he hosted Belinda and I in Seattle. And he took us to the Capitol Grill for dinner after we did a two-day show. Mm-hmm. Gene grilled us for about an hour and a half because he knew we were like the new kids on the block. Mm-hmm. And I planned on grilling him for an hour and a half, all right, thinking I was going to suck out of his mind what he had going on. And I realized what he did. He took us to school because it wasn't until after it was all over that I realized this guy just spent an hour and a half wanting to know about what young salon owners were thinking and doing mm-hmm. in beauty. And he took notes and notes and notes, and he empowered us in such a way that any passing thought we had about what we were doing in our salon, he walked away with. And I realized that we got one thing from him that night, and it was phenomenal. It was probably worth more than everything we gave him. But he told us, it was talk about leadership, and he says that he hugs his staff the most when they deserve it the least.
Wow.
Because it's easy to pile on and kick people when they're down. But it's when things aren't right and their personal life gets in the way or there's just some challenges they're having that have nothing to do with work. Hmm. And even if they do have something to do with work, put your arm around and say, how can I be there for you?
Wow.
What's up? What's the problem? Hmm. I'm your biggest cheerleader. I'll help. And it was huge.
Such great advice.
Yeah.
As we start to wrap things up here, do you have a final message for our listeners?
As far as one single message, I think it goes back to point number one. There is no there. And if we just get up each day and bring our best and understand that every day's an opportunity to get better, every day's an opportunity to enhance your life, but those around you, whether it be your staff, whether it be your clients, whether it be your family. Hmm. I kind of take on that responsibility that if I just do my part and make my contribution and nobody else has to carry me or worry about my part, then they could actually blossom and do their part, and together we all win.
That's great. Well, again, congratulations. We have to thank Coral.
Yes, we do.
Down in Sarasota, who hooked us up, and the second that you came into office or into power here, whatever you want to call it, she's like, Wynn, you got to hook up with Frank. You got to get Frank's story recorded. So thank you, Coral, and congratulations with where you're headed.
Well, when
it's exciting.
I thank you for that. And just so you know, I'm going to be reaching out to people like you to help with it. And because you're a hairdresser, and like we talked about tonight.
I'm not a hairdresser. I've never been a hairdresser.
Oh, all right.
Did you know that?
All right, you're a hair guy.
There, I'm a hair guy. I have no hair, but I'm a hair guy.
Yeah, you're a hair guy. Right. So I'll need your help. We need bright people like you all helping us to make contributions to make this industry more phenomenal than it already is. When I think back, I mean, I got to pinch myself sometimes to realize that this, because of hairdressing, we get to do the things we do and meet the people we meet and have the experiences we experience. Mm-hmm. It's beyond belief. I think we're so blessed, and we need to count those blessings daily.
I agree. Thanks, Frank.
Thanks, Wynn.